Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm trying a different microphone here. I hope this is going to work well. This is our 29th Esoteric Astrology adventure, and today is still the 25th of July. We've been talking here about considering the dualities in terms of the constellation and its sign opposite, and DK is telling us how we're going to do that. We're going to take up the points in the following manner, he says. From the standpoint of commencement at Aries, so we're going to consider the way the two modes of either progressing or regressing around the wheel, and how that means the different ways of responding to the potentialities of the signs of the zodiac. We covered the idea, we're going to investigate astrology from the standpoint of man upon the probationary path and how he is still quite dizzy or giddy upon that path, not knowing his true orientation, but eventually begins to do so under the influence, the intuitive influence of Gemini, clarifying the pairs of opposites, and also under the influence of Sagittarius, which gives him purpose and direction. And finally, the crisis of initiation comes, followed by the crisis of renunciation. Okay. Then we reach the point where we can begin the third method of investigation, and DK is going to undertake his examination from the standpoint of the pledged disciple or initiate, which is certainly different from that of the probationary disciple. It's the pledged disciple or initiate who traverses again the path of the sun and finds, and this, of course, the path of the sun is now progressive. In other words, it's the reversed wheel, as is the case for the probationary disciple as well, but with much more conflict for the probationary disciple. Now the purpose is so strong for the pledged disciple or initiate that the reversing wheel is gradually overcoming the normal wheel, and the rending process of the two wheels turning is decreasing because the power of the will is becoming stronger. So we're taking this from the standpoint of the pledged disciple and initiate who traverses again the path of the sun and finds that which he has discovered himself to be in Leo, finds its crown in Aquarius. Now this is very interesting. He's discovered himself to be the soul, not just the personality in Leo. He's responding to the mantra, I am that. But at the same time, he is moving towards the group consciousness and even eventually the universal consciousness of Aquarius. And it's very interesting, the idea of the crown, because the crown center can be considered a radiatory center ruled by radiatory Aquarius. In other words, it's the synthesis of so many of the faculties, and Aquarius rules this grand synthesis. So Aquarius is one of the signs particularly associated with the third and with the fourth initiation, when the crown center is greatly stimulated. Purpose being in the nature of the crown center, and will being in the nature of the base of the spine center. Okay, so the word crown is a hint. Is a hint concerning the unfoldment of the highest head center. say, he traverses the path of the sun and finds that which he has discovered himself to be in Leo, that finds its crown in Aquarius. In other words, Aquarius is considered a consummating sign, and so many of the initiates take their final incarnation in Aquarius and find themselves as world servers. Occasionally you find the world's savior taking the final incarnation in Pisces. The separative individual consciousness becomes the group consciousness in Aquarius, and group consciousness or universal consciousness, and he begins to comprehend the significance of that basic combination of signs, that triangle in the consciousness of humanity. There are a number of triangles in the consciousness of humanity, and they signify a type of progress from an initial condition to a final condition. So these triangles of consciousness are to be carefully noted. And let us see what triangle he's talking about here. It's the triangle of Cancer, Leo, Aquarius. In Cancer, we have the mass awareness and the instinctual consciousness. I think, you know, if I had these somewhat smaller, maybe a number 10 perhaps, we would, that will do it. We have mass awareness and we have instinctual consciousness, a kind of consciousness which all share and which is based upon the instinctual urges and the environments into which those instinctual urges force one. There is no real individuality, and interestingly enough, the constellation of Cancer is quite dim, quite vague, quite diffuse. There are no real brilliant points. It relates perhaps to the idea that for us, and how we perceive the constellation Cancer, it was much more powerful in the previous solar system, and especially, we are told by D.K., in the first part of the previous solar system. Leo, on the other hand, is a much more well-defined constellation as we view it, and it signifies at first individual awareness, and then finally group awareness, and then an awareness of oneness. But here we're talking about the individual awareness, and it conveys the fifth ray. It suggests the illumination, at least, of the concrete mind. It suggests intelligent consciousness. Aquarius, interestingly, is also a relatively dim constellation. You have to be careful in how you try to make it out, and it refers to a future condition, not yet precipitated, not yet vitally radiant in the awareness of humanity. It signifies group awareness and the intuitive consciousness, which are alive in a few but have yet to grow very much in the consciousness of humanity. You begin to wonder later, when there is real group awareness, real intuitive consciousness for the masses, whether that will even be, you know, in this solar system or rather the next, whether the appearance of the constellation Aquarius will thereby look greater in some way, more defined, more brilliant. Anyway, Cancer, Leo, Aquarius, from the mass to the individual to the group, from instinct to intelligence to intuition, a major triangle in consciousness, and I think we can all place ourselves somewhat here. We are perhaps in the second stage of the Leo consciousness and attempting to move into the first phase of group, real group awareness, and eventually achieve that broadened group consciousness, which might be called universal and takes in the entire planet and the entire system. It's a climaxing condition, and it is accompanied by the quite full unfoldment of the head center. We don't know when the head center is fully unfolded, because we can see that, I think, even in the Maya Virupas of 6th or 7th degree initiates. If one unfolds a Maya Virupa, then the chakras will also be part of it, and the unfoldments of those higher chakras may well progress. Then, from the standpoint of achievement in Capricorn, you always reach some pinnacle in Capricorn at whatever level you may be operating. It can be the pinnacle of personality achievement, of soul achievement, or even spirit achievement. From the standpoint of achievement in Capricorn, he works for several lives around the zodiacal path, descending into the sea of mass consciousness. He's still on the reversed wheel, going forward, as it were. That means to respond powerfully to the higher potentials of a sign. That's what progressing on the zodiacal wheel means. He goes around the zodiacal path and may incarnate in a number of signs, apparently, descending into the sea of mass consciousness, but this time he is not a victim of mass consciousness at all. He is a kind of a server or savior. He becomes what is called in the ancient books the crab who clears the ocean of matter which flows around the soul of man. So he becomes a scavenger in a way, and he is removing the matter which somehow inhibits the radiance of the soul. It's a cleaning operation, a scavenging operation, and the claws then have a different meaning, don't they? They are not so concerned with grasping and clinging for oneself, but they get hold of obstructions and remove the obstructions from one's fellow human beings and maybe other forms of life so that they can radiate their true inner nature, and eventually to become a functioning world savior in Pisces. So it's interesting that DK seems to suggest that we do not move immediately from Capricorn into Pisces, or into Aquarius necessarily, but we go through, as an initiate, a third degree initiate, let us say, through certain signs of service in which we are no longer vulnerable to the type of limitations we experienced in those signs before, but rather are helping others avoid susceptibility to those kinds of limitations. Help is always available. Okay. He descends into the world of men to save mankind and further the plan. And if we succeed in furthering the plan, there will always be the result that a type of salvation has taken place, because the plan indeed saves. If we have the will and courage and intelligence and love to follow and express the plan, we will bring salvation, at least strong service with that expression. He is then the fish who swims free in the ocean of matter. The fish is perhaps always a symbol of a self who swims in the ocean of experience but has a certain type of integrity and mobility, and he has the power to swim by his own volition and is not swept along perhaps in instinctively reacting schools of fish. You've sometimes seen how the fish all respond at once in an instinctual way. He seems to have deliberation here. And maybe he is identified not only with Pisces, but with the great fish associated with the sign Aquarius, P Piscis Ostrinus or Australis, who is the saving fish. So, you know, it takes quite a bit not to be overcome by the third aspect, tendencies of matter, and swept along like the mass as it is with cancer, being engulfed by mass consciousness and responding and thinking, if we can call it that, just like everybody else, with no real willpower and mind and self-determination. So this is the progress of man, and DK is trying to get us to understand the great wheels, the wheel of form, retrogressing, going clockwise, the wheel of consciousness, progressing, going counterclockwise. The initiate has always to express in each sign of the zodiac the consummation and spiritual fruit of earlier life experience, world experiment, and soul achievement. You know, we oftentimes leave a sign in a state of incomplete achievement, and there is a frustration there, and we can identify with the words of the poet Robert Browning when he says, "Ah, that a man's reach should exceed his grasp, or what's a heaven for?" So we do not bring consummation in each of the signs so many times, but eventually we are to pass in each sign of the zodiac and bring about a type of consummation for that sign. The question is this done in any sequential manner, or is this, are there generally a period of life later in one's incarnational path when it is quite likely to bring forward a degree of consummation in each sign? I'm not sure it has to be perfect. Maybe perfection is only reached in the sign Pisces by a world savior as he renounces all to save humanity. So, spiritual fruit of earlier life experience, experiment, and achievement. Those are words which are often used. We begin with the experience, we evaluate the experience and find out within ourselves how it might be improved, and thus we experiment, and that experiment, when the experiments are wise and skillful, it leads to achievement, not just personality achievement, but soul achievement. Selfishness, which is what we do experience so often in the various signs, has ever to be translated into living, active service. Well, the three aspects of divinity are found right there. The life aspect is found in living. Activity is the third aspect. Service is the second aspect. Living, active service, and desire has to demonstrate its transmutation into in the purity of spiritual aspiration for identification with the will of God. So the progress there is desire, aspiration, identification. First, we must aspire to identification with the will of God before we will be in a sufficient condition of receptivity to be impressed by it and have the fortitude, the single-mindedness to carry it out. Anyway, there's a great destiny that lies before all of us. At times, we may feel overwhelmed by various kinds of circumstances, and it may seem as if we will never get there, you know, thinking about time in some sequential manner. But perhaps if we were capable of grasping something of the eternal now, we would find ourselves more optimistic about reaching our goal of identification, especially on this planet, on the path of Earth service, if we take that path, identification with all beings, with all sentient beings, so we realize, in fact, that we are each and all of them, and naught is but me, the capital me, the one I. D.K. goes on, there are two points which must be dealt with in order to enable you to study with certain definite ideas clearly formulated in your minds. He's trying to build in a certain structure of thought here so we can study successfully without being overwhelmed by a lot of new information. Of course, I realize I'm speaking to quite a few of you who have experience with this book and who are not new to astrology and who have spent even years in the esoteric astrology book. And that's, you know, partially why I'm not going through it in a strictly linear manner, but I'm trying to ramify and bring in certain connections which will place this book within the sphere of knowledge that has been given by Master DK, a great sphere, and finding the place of astrology within that sphere by drawing or offering many links to other parts of that sphere of knowledge which he has offered. I've hinted at these ideas, hinted at them in some of my earlier books, but it will be of service to refer to them again and to expand the idea somewhat, because after all, we do forget, don't we? I mean, what does seem vivid at one point may be, even if it was marvelously vivid, may fade and need to be revived. I would have you carry them in your minds as you read and study. I have frequently referred to the fact that the entire science of astrology is based upon a non-existent condition. We've talked about this from the very beginning of the book. All is illusion, O dweller in the shadows. Even the universe is illusion. So much of what we perceive with our present faculties of consciousness is not the inner reality at all. But there is enough to perceive within the outer actuality to give us a method of approaching the inner reality. So anyway, it has no basis in material fact, and yet is eternally based on truth. And this is one of those great paradoxes. I think he's going to say something quite important here. The zodiac is, as you well know, the imaginary path of the sun in the heavens. It's not really a path at all. It's a seeming path based upon the revolution of the earth around the sun. And, of course, that's what creates the image of the zodiac. And there is also a kind of a daily zodiac as well due to the rotation of the earth on its axis. And the sun seems then to follow the line of the zodiac across the sky, not moving from sign to sign, that would be too fast, but at least we traverse the zodiac in which the sun has its apparently fixed position, at least fixed for a day, although not really fixed at all. The zodiac is, as you well know, the imaginary path of the sun in the heavens. It is therefore largely an illusion, but the constellations of this zodiac, the constellations through which the sun appears to pass, they are very real in a way, and they have their own definite qualities which we must learn to absorb, appropriate, assimilate, and express. It is therefore largely an illusion from the exoteric point of view, because after all, the sun is not really passing through those constellations at all. There's kind of an alignment with the constellations. Okay. But at the same time, the constellations exist, and the streams of energy which pass and repass, intermingle and interlock, join each other, cross each other, reinforce each other, interfere with each other. The streams of energy from the constellations intermingle and interlock throughout the body of space, and they are by no means illusions, but definitely express eternal relationships. Well, certainly relationships that persist for a long time, because, you know, when we look at the stars in the heavens, they are constantly changing positions, and each of them has its own proper motion, and the configurations which we see at this time are not the configurations which will be seen at a later point in cosmic history and so forth, but they do have long-lasting relationships as far as the time cycles on our Earth may go. It is the misuse of the various energies which has created the illusion. And that's a very interesting idea, because you do wonder whether the misuse of the energies has led to a kind of thickening of the consciousness of humanity. Maybe they could see much more before. Maybe all that we can see now is the barest fragment of what is really transpiring interiorly. Madame Blavatsky talked quite a bit about how consciousness of the inner worlds was lost during the later Atlantean age and during the Aryan age. So we do not see the reality behind the illusion, and our powers of perception have been much dimmed, and perhaps this creates the illusion. Anyway, we must learn to rightly use the passing and repassing, crossing, intermingling energies. This illusory path is consequently as much a reality to humanity today as are the personal illusions of any individual. And let's just call these basic misinterpretations. Human beings are very sure of the reality of their interpretations, but a wider and greater consciousness will point out the errors of their assumptions, their concepts, their conclusions, and how they perceive reality. So humanity at this moment is perceiving as reality something that really doesn't exist as reality, something that is an illusion. These illusions are due to the polarization of the individual upon the astral plane, which tends to self-centeredness. This polarization tends to self-centeredness. And when there is self-centeredness, there is always illusion, because there is a fundamental bias which prevents vision of things as they are. Okay, so we've heard of the astral inversion, and we know how glamorously and exaggeratedly and minimizingly, terrible words, but okay, you get the idea, the perceptions are when we are self-centered. Our perceptions are always skewed because the ego, the lower ego, is standing there as if it's a reality, and it doesn't allow us to perceive things as they are, because the ego has not shrunken to a tiny point where it does not interfere with perception. All right, so we are living in an illusion. It is largely a personality illusion. It has much to do with the fact that our planetary logos has not overcome his personality nature, that the planetary spirit has not overcome the spirit of the planet, as we remember from the previous webinar. Spirit of the planet is the Earth entity, the spirit of the Earth, and the planetary spirit, with a capital S, is the planetary logos himself. So we are dealing with misperceptions caused largely by our astral polarization, and if we could have a mental polarization illumined by the soul, we would not see in this distorted manner. Okay. It is interesting also. Interesting also to note in this connection that due to the precession of the equinoxes, a fourth type of force is brought to bear upon the planet and man, but one which is seldom recognized or given due place in the horoscope. In other words, there is a wobbling of the Earth's axis, there is a gradual movement of 1 degree every 72 years, and there is a precessional factor which can be introduced into the personal horoscope. There are various ways of doing this. The month and the sign, or the place of the sun in the heavens, do not really coincide. Well, that's certainly true in one respect, because generally Taurus is the month of May is the month of Taurus, generally speaking, but there's a part of May which coincides with the sign Gemini, and so it is. There's kind of an overlap. But I think what DK is talking about is that the sign and the constellations really do not coincide. Because when we are tropically, and from the point of view of the ecliptic, the imaginary path of the sun, when we are supposedly in the sign Aries, the sun at the vernal equinox is really aligning with Pisces at this time, and it will retrogress at the vernal equinox quite shortly. On the day when the sun passes the vernal equinox, it will be aligning with the latter part of the sign Aquarius, and backward it will go for thousands of years, so that the tropical sign, based upon the rotation of the Earth around the sun, will become farther and farther away from the constellation with which the vernal equinox aligns at the first point of spring. So, but DK is going to say something very interesting here. He's going to say, when we state, for instance, that the sun is in Aries, we're not really wrong, you see. It does convey an esoteric truth, but not an exoteric fact. And so often astrologers are, you know, they are criticized. They are criticized by scientists for the fact that the sun, when it's in Aries, as the astrologers say it is, it's really aligning with the constellation Pisces. So they say, well, you have your perceptions entirely wrong. What you say does not correspond with the facts. But the idea here is that the astrological signs do mean something, and that the different portions of the Earth's orbit, or the ecliptic, actually are characterized by distinctive energies, so that when the sun, the sun was in Aries at the beginning of the great cycle. Okay, I wonder if I have somehow... Yes, I did. I erased that. Okay, now I've got it. When we state, for instance, that the sun is in Aries, it does convey an esoteric truth. In other words, at that time when the sun is aligned with the vernal equinox, regardless of what the constellation may be towards which the vernal equinox is pointing, the energy of Aries is released upon the planet, even more than the energy of the constellation. So there is, as I talked about in earlier webinars here, there are portions of the Earth's orbit which are particularly sensitive to or aligned with the energies of constellations, so that that very first part of the Earth's orbit, or that portion of the ecliptic, when the sun is tropically in Aries, in other words, when it's the first day of spring, as we call it, the constellation Aries is in attunement with that portion of the ecliptic, with that portion of the zodiacal circle. In other words, from, let's say, March 21st to approximately April 21st, when planets are in that portion of the Earth's orbit, or when they're in that portion of the ecliptic, the constellation, the energy from the constellation is affecting those planets. So therefore, it is an esoteric truth. The sun is conveying Aresian energy. It is conveying the energy of Aries. And this is a profound statement by the Tibetan. He's really telling us that we cannot throw away tropical astrology and settle upon sidereal astrology. I mean, it may be that when we are high initiates who are identified with the life of the planet, perhaps Chohans, and we become planetary lives, that the planetary god himself is relating to the constellations directly. And then sidereal astrology will be spiritually very meaningful for us. But if you study the form of various types of life, and let's just say the form of a human being, you will see that the form of human beings is much affected by the tropical sign, as that sign receives the energy of the constellation. Regardless of where that constellation may be, there'll come a time 10,000 years ago when the sun is in Aries, the background of it may be Scorpio, the constellation Scorpio, or something like that, or Libra. I'll calculate that out exactly, but you get the idea. The vernal equinox will be aligned with a completely different constellation, and yet the sun will esoterically be in Aries. And the energy of the constellation Aries will come through at that time when the sun is crossing the vernal equinox, and for approximately a month following that. So, inner dynamics relating the constellations, the energy of the constellations, and the streams of energy to the sections of the Earth's aura and to the sections of the Earth's orbit will have to be understood before the fundamental esotericism of that relationship is seen as real. And thus criticism will end that astrologers do not have their head on straight and can't even accord with the facts. They know the exoteric facts. The astrologer know the exoteric facts, but they also follow the influence of the energy, and they know that something is operating within this context of the signs, which is a very real energy event, energy process. Now, he's telling us that the sun was in Aries, in other words, that at the vernal equinox, the sun did align with the constellation Aries at the beginning of this great cycle, perhaps 2,000 years ago, but it is not in exactly the same position today, against the background of stars, when it is found in that sign. So this is such an important paragraph to establish the validity of tropical astrology. Of course, anybody who opens their eyes can see that people do really represent in form, in temperament, in consciousness, their tropical positions. You have to force so hard, in my opinion at least, to make a person, to pretend that a person is responding more to their sidereal positions. It's a very remote response, if it is so. I mean, I know in my own case, you know, I've lived as an Aries individual my whole life, doing the things Aries people do, and doing them well before I even knew I was an Aries individual. is my sun sign really Pisces? Well, maybe the energy of Pisces comes into my chart in a different way, but not from the sun sign. I have not lived the life of the individual with the sun in Pisces, always the direct, assertive, pioneering, extremist, pushing onward attitude has characterized me. It's the attitude of Aries. It is a very real energy. It comes from the sun in Aries, tropically considered. And maybe you'll find the same to be the case for you, and my form also demonstrates that. When the form demonstrates a link with a certain sign, you know that the form is built upon the etheric body, and the etheric body is built upon the soul. Soul qualities. They are reflections. The etheric body is a reflection of the soul. So the form is not just an exoteric thing at all. It's a deeply esoteric thing, which is the outpicturing of deeply esoteric factors. Anyway, this is how I found it to be in my own examination of these things. Also, it should be remembered that it is necessary to know the moment of birth and the place of birth in casting the horoscope of the individual. So in order to have a perfectly correct understanding and astrological deductions in connection with the constellation, the planets, and our Earth, there should be a fixed time from which to reckon. Well, that's a problem. We don't really have a fixed time. Maybe he's hinting at the idea that our time in our calendar is only relatively correct, but within that relativity, we are also supposed to have as perfectly accurate a time as we possibly can. At least we need to know the moment of birth. Now, lately they're taking more care in recording these things, even though hospital clocks can be notoriously discrepant. You know, you just ask individuals what time they watch a show, they'll show a 2 or 3 minute range, and those 2 or 3 minutes can mean 2 or 3 years by certain methods of directing. So we want to have, as Master DK no doubt has, a perfectly correct understanding and accurate deductions in connection with the constellation. Now, that means that we really need to know the point at which 0 degrees of Aries occurs relative to the constellations themselves and not to the vernal equinox. Constellations are of unequal size. Some are very compressed, some are very expansive, like Virgo, and yet we continue to use our 30-degree methods. And there does seem to be some accuracy in allotting 30 degrees per sign, regardless of the exoteric extension of these constellations. There should be a fixed time from which to reckon. That fixed time, says the Tibetan, is as yet unknown in exoteric astrology, though the hierarchy possesses the needed information and it will be made available when the right time comes, presumably when the such knowledge can be constructively used. I mean, we need to know the exact moment when the Earth is entering a specific age. Now, actually, the Tibetan has given that to us. He's given us a couple of points from which the mathematically astute astrologers can reason. He's given us the year 2117 for the alignment of the vernal equinox with the end, presumably, of the 30th degree, or with the 30th degree of Aquarius. In other words, with the very end of Pisces, the very beginning of Aquarius. He's also given us a figure for the moment when individualization occurred, perhaps using those two figures, and I have known some esotericists who have reckoned from at least one of those figures, we can get our fixed point and put all temporally into the proper relations. That fixed time is as yet unknown to exoteric astrology, and therefore perhaps all of our times are uncertain, even as we may not know the true A, the note A. What is the true vibration of A, as the hierarchy understands it, which would allow us to understand the true vibration of all the other notes? That is another one of those fixed points that we need. Nor do we necessarily know the frequency of the true indigo, the true green. There's a whole range of greens and of indigo-related colors, but we don't know the frequency which the hierarchy considers to be the central point of that color. So we're lacking many specificities which the incoming of the fifth ray will give us. It's going to be very powerful in the age of Aquarius and will allow us to have certain points, certain frequencies from which we can reckon and thereby lay out an accurate picture of relationships between notes, colors, and dates. It will be made available at the right time. It is the knowledge of this inner information which constitutes the basis of the statements which I have made or will make. Well, DK is saying, look, I have this information, and as a result, to me, astrology appears in a certain way, and I have to tell you how astrology appears according to the perception of one who has information that you do not have. Okay. So this will seem, he says, the statements which I have made or will make, which will seem revolutionary to the orthodox investigator. Not only revolutionary, but probably highly inaccurate and unwelcome. It took a long time before various astrological organizations were willing to even hear about the idea of alternative rulers and esoteric and hierarchical, and about the fundamental ideas of esoteric astrology, although it does seem to be coming along now. There has to be a constant rectification. There is a specifically astrological word which means an adjustment leading to precise accuracy. We often try to rectify charts. We do this through available evidence and timing in the life, and some people accurately use pendulums and other sort of intuitive methods to get the feel of the exact moment of birth. Some of them are very successful. I've tested them out myself. I've tested out some of their conclusions, and I found some of them are remarkably successful. So there is a kind of intuitive method of rectification, but I always think it should be counter-checked as well. There has to be a constant rectification of the earlier conclusions of humanity, laboring under illusion and astral centralization. And of this, the outstanding instance is the statement in the Bible, was it by Bishop Usher, something, that the prime date of creation is at 4004 BC, and by the way, at 9 o'clock in the morning. I think it was an Irish bishop, a very logical and quasi-scientific man, and he, based upon the infallibility of the Bible and what was said, this is the date he determined. And good, sincere people believed in it for a long time, and some still do. This is recognized as an error by modern science, an absolute understatement, but it is still believed by many. Yes, even this was written 80 years ago, and still in our day and age, it is still believed. Extraordinary. But then, you know, we had to deal with paleontology, with the discovery of the fossil remains already in the 19th century, even the 18th century. This was happening and undermining these theological conclusions. Unless we allow science, even a very deep kind of esoteric science, eventually, to test the conclusions of religious belief, we will definitely be plunged into error, even as now millions of people are on our earth in various of the religions. I earlier gave a hint upon which definite astrological computation could be based when I gave the time of the great approach of the hierarchy to our planetary manifestation when individualization took place and the fourth kingdom in nature appeared. Well, okay, hierarchy of what? Hierarchy? Of solar angels, perhaps, because in a way, Sanat Kumara had not yet come to Earth with his Kumaras and founded Shambhala and hierarchy some 18 a million years ago. But the hierarchy of solar angels, lords of the flame in a way, did come. And this was a Sagittarian event in a way. He says the birth of the fourth kingdom, he places the stupendous event as happening 21,688,345 years ago. Some have thought this is a symbolic number, but I think it's probably quite accurate. And if we know the year in the early 1930s, when this portion of esoteric astrology was written, we probably can come quite close. Then we can begin to reckon backwards if we assume that all precessional ages have been invariant. Now, at the moment, they seem to last 2160 years, and a great Platonic year is something like 25,920 years, which is 12 times 2160. So we can possibly reckon back to the time of the beginning of individualization. Now, almost 80 years have passed, perhaps 80 years since the writing of this section of the Esoteric Astrology book, but that would not be difficult for us to put together. Individualization occurred then 3 million years before the coming of Sanat Kumara, the Kumaras, and the founding of Shambhala hierarchy. He says at that time the sun was in Leo. Now, there is another question. Do we mean the sun was in Leo in terms of a lesser precessional age of 2,160 years, or can we say that a greater precessional age of Leo was involved and 25,000 years were necessitated? Usually when we say the sun was in Leo, we mean that there is a not the month per se, but that there was an alignment with an age of Leo. It would take a while. If he was narrowing this down to the month, I think that would be extraordinary. The sun was in Leo. Okay. Let's look at this. We're getting there now. What I tend to think is that the sun at the vernal equinox was aligned with Leo. It seems unlikely that we're just dealing with the month as a beginning period. The process then initiated upon the physical plane. Oh, by the way, I just want to go back to the idea that Leo is strongly connected with the solar angels and with the creation of the egoic lotus as a potentially radiant source eventually upon the higher mental plane. So there is, in a way, the coming of solar fire. I think we can see the relationship between solar fire and the sun in Leo. So that that spark of mind, which was not only a spark of mind, but a spark of love and a spark of will, was implanted in animal man, destined for a radiant future at the time when the sun was in Leo and the egoic lotus, which would eventually be a radiant golden lotus, was implanted upon the higher mental plane when the sun was in Leo. It all seems to correspond. The process then initiated upon the physical plane and producing outer physical events, took approximately 5,000 years to mature. So here we can be convinced that we are talking about precessional ages, which last some 2,000 or 2,500 years. Let's just say we had to deal with the Sun in Leo, and then the Sun went to Cancer, and then the Sun went to Gemini, and it took, you know, approximately 2,500 years for each movement of the Sun. So we are talking about the Sun at the moment of the vernal equinox, and every year the Sun was against the scene, or it would be seen if you could see through the Sun, seen against the background of certain stars, the stars of Leo, the stars of Cancer, and finally the stars of Gemini. And there was a final crisis of individualization took place, and the door was then closed upon the animal kingdom. Now, you know, 5,000 years shows us that we are not dealing with the great precessional ages of 25,000 years, because otherwise it would have been 50,000 years. 25,000 of Leo, 25,000 of Cancer, totaling 50,000 years. And we also don't know when in Leo this started. Toward what part of the constellation was the vernal equinox directed? How much was the Earth into the precessional age of Leo, when individualization took place, and how much into Gemini was it when the final crisis took place and the door was closed? What does he mean by the final crisis? We have heard that in those days there was a great destruction of the of animal man. Can it mean the final anchoring of the spark of mind in a successful way? Were there 5,000 years of uncertainty and a final anchoring occurring in Gemini? Was there a particular relationship between the solar angel and the newly stimulated animal man confirmed by that time of Gemini, when the two brothers come into relationship? Maybe he will say more here. But anyway, the door was closed upon the animal kingdom at that time, and it seems that there have been there have been perhaps some different times of closing. I'm thinking that there was a time later when it became, up to that point, it was still possible for some individualization of animals to occur. It is even possible today, says DK, for some very rare and advanced animals to individualize before the next round, when the mass of the animals that have been held back will be individualized. All right, it is time then for us to say the great invocation. We have reached, what page are we on now? Let's see. Okay, page 64. We are on page 64. So this is Esoteric Astrology number adventure, EAA 29. We have gone up to page 64. And EAA 28 started at page 61. So we're doing somewhat better now. We are making 3 pages per program, but I won't promise that that is always the way it will be. So EA 29 from page 61 to 64. And we will do together the great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, our next esoteric astrology adventure then will continue on page 64, and we will carry on. We are two-thirds of the way through the introduction. There's a lot to study, many ramifying ideas, many implications, many speculations possible, many generalities, and more specifics to come in the future. Okay, we'll see you next time.